Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Hey, First Things First listeners, before we start the show, I wanted to tell you about our brand new Fox Sports app and website, foxsports.com, reimagined for the modern sports fan. Go ahead, download the new app right now. You don't even have to pause this episode. Every day on the new app and website, you'll see the top stories in sports, plus a rich world of written content, videos, social media, and analytics to give you a 360-degree view of the most important stories of the day. Streaming live TV has never been so easy or elegant. Every Fox Sports game, including all pregame and postgame shows, as well as the televised version of this show, just a click away. For the extra invested fan, we also go deep with real-time wagering lines, trending prop bets, win probability, and key player projections. So download the new Fox Sports app or visit www.foxsports.com. Now let's start the show. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. We are back after a little week-long break, and it feels great. We have so much to talk about. Jenna Wolf, Nick Wright, Kevin Wiles, Chris Broussard is with us. Questions we are asking ourselves on a Monday morning. Are the Raptors actually a better finals bet than the Lakers at this point? Why is Zion frustrated with his Pelicans team? And is Aaron Rodgers' time in Green Bay nearing an end? We will get to all of that, but we start this morning with all of James Harden and the Houston Rockets facing Giannis and the Bucks last night. Here we go, pick it up in the fourth, under 2 minutes to play. Houston down one. Harden stripping Giannis for the steal. The Beard finding Russell Westbrook in transition, two of Russ's 31 points on the night. Now, under 20 seconds to play, and with the Bucks still down one, Giannis, another costly turnover. Giannis finished 36 and 18, but he could not get it done late. Bucks, though, still with a chance. Chris Middleton from deep to tie. It is no good. And the Rockets hold on to win 120 to 116. Nick, the Rockets 2-0 in the restart. You said all along they can make a legit run this postseason. Does this go ahead and prove that?
Well, for many, I'm sure it doesn't prove it. But it's not just that they're 2-0. It's the way they've won those two games. Down seven with 45 seconds left in the first game of the restart against the Mavs. Teams were like 2-811 in that circumstance in recorded NBA history. They win down eight with less than 3 minutes left against the best team in basketball, the Bucks. They go on a 16-4 run to close it. And I am so glad that my man Chris Broussard is here today. In fact, it was so important to me. Last night, the moment the buzzer sounds, I did something I don't normally do. I call our ace producer, Sam Pepper. I figured he might be up Googling with the latest travesty with his beloved Mets. I was right. I get him on the phone and I say, hey, Pep, make sure, is Broussard on the show tomorrow? He said he is. I said, thank goodness. Because you know what needs to happen? Chris Broussard needs to put some respect on the Rockets' name.
Oh, boy.
Chris Broussard needs to acknowledge that there is no template, there is no established path to beating this team. How about this? In NBA history, 177 times going into last night, this is via Elias, a team had allowed 110 points or more, under 40% from the field, and been out-rebounded by 25-plus. Those teams were 0 and 177. Until last night, the Rockets, because they're not playing a different sport than everyone else, but it's damn close. And this style, plus a rejuvenated Russ, a absolutely tireless James Harden, it's going to create problems for everyone, Broussard. And if all of a sudden they are late game closers, look out to your beloved Clippers. Look out, everyone in the league, because you do have two of the 10 best players in basketball and a system that no one else prepares you for.
First of all, I have said all season long that the Rockets are the third best team in the West. I have always said that, the third best team in the West. And you didn't answer the question. It's for all your hooting all your hollering, all your braggadocio, you didn't answer the question. Can they make a deep playoff run? And the reason you didn't answer it is because you know to make a deep playoff run, they would have to get past your Lakers. Because right now, Nick, that is who they would meet in the second round, not the Clippers. They're the four seed right now. They'd meet the Lakers in the second round. Now, I have contended all along that their problem is they won't beat one of the LA teams. And I would not pick them over the Lakers. However, if I had to say between the two LA teams, which one they have a better chance of beating, it would be the Lakers. The Lakers have problems defending on the perimeter. LeBron's great when he needs to be, but LeBron can't guard everybody. Who else is going to guard on that perimeter? And guess what? When you play the Rockets, you better be able to guard on the perimeter. That's the Lakers' Achilles heel, and that could be a problem. Again, I wouldn't pick them over L.A., but if they're going to beat one of the L.A. teams, it would be the Lakers. And so that's what you have to watch out about. Look, the energy is great. Russ keeps defenses off balance, and then the three-point shooting is just – look, they put up so many, even if they only hit 33%, 34%, it's still effective. That's how they've gotten back in these games that they've been down on. And their defense late has been good. So I will give them credit for that. Again, I've liked Houston, just not as much as the LA team. And now I know it's just silent. I don't hear me. What if they meet the Lakers in the second round? Then what about
No, listen. Well, I don't think they beat the Lakers. The Lakers are going to win the title, but this whole – they're the four seed right now. It's true, but they are – there is such a logjam, 3-6, that they could end up 3-4, 5-6. And while – listen, Broussard is doing – listen, this is why he's a seasoned television professional, probably one of the reasons he has an NBA vote and I don't, because he knows how to play these linguistic games, which is, I've had them as my third favorite – it's like saying they're my third favorite pet. You have two dogs you've had for a decade and then a parakeet. And you're like, it's my third favorite pet. Yeah, but you don't give a damn about them. Listen, I will go on the ledge. You won't, Broussard. If they play the Clippers in the playoffs, they'll win. If they play the Clippers in the postseason, they'll win. Now, listen, maybe they do end up the four. They get the Lakers in round two and they end up losing because I don't think they can beat the Lakers. But I think they are right now not one of the three best teams in the West. As I've said all year, they are the second best team in the West Wilds. And I think the end of that game last night went to show you why.
Yeah, I thought the end of the game was a little bit weird. And we can show the play. The rebounding is really the Achilles heel of this entire team. Like the game, this should be a tie game here. There's Giannis with four Rockets and the Korver's in the corner. If he makes that pass, this is a different game. We know Giannis is not the best passer in the world, but that's an easy play there and he missed it. Nick, I think you were a little bit too happy when a team gets out-rebounded by 29 and still wins the game. That's a rare occurrence, and I know you use it as an example of how they're great, but it's been 5,357 games between the last two dates that has worked. So I think this game is an aberration. I don't think they're the parakeet of the NBA, as you've referred to them as, but I don't believe in the Rockets because they're able to – the stats just don't work on the rebounding side, Nick.
Go ahead, Jenna. Right, I apologize. Go ahead.
All right. We spent some time focusing on the Rockets.
The three-point shot is the equalizer.
Make your point, Broussard.
Rebound. Yeah, the three-point shot is somewhat of an equalizer because Dallas out-rebounded them badly too.
So we mentioned Giannis's numbers last night. They were great. 36 points, 18 boards, 8 assists. It wasn't enough for the win because it wasn't enough late in the game. Although, according to Giannis, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Take a listen to what he had to say after the game.
I said earlier, we learned from this. You know, it's good to play close games. We don't play a lot of close games in the other 65 games that we played. So got to keep learning, got to keep executing it.
So Giannis makes a good point. The Bucks do have the most 10-point wins this season. They're just not used to having to close out games. Nick, anything for Milwaukee to be worried about after this loss last night?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to overreact, but the only reasons you would, because Wilds has pointed this out all year, the Bucks have a historic statistical resume. Giannis is having a historic statistical season. And so why aren't they the overwhelming favorite to win the title? They have an easier path than the Lakers do. All the numbers say they should be the overwhelming favorite. And it's because of two little buts that both reared their head late in the game yesterday, which is one, they don't play a lot of close games, so they don't have a lot of experience playing a lot of close games, and you're not going to roll through every round of the playoffs via blowout. And the other one is, listen, Giannis was 36-18-8 last night. He was magnificent. However, because of his lack of any type of reliable jump shot, you can if the games are close, Broussard, it is probably going to come down to other guys hitting shots. Defense is collapsing on Giannis, doubling Giannis, and forcing the ball out of his hands. Now, one way to avoid that, Chris, is to make sure those games aren't close. In which case, what I would say is to Budenholzer, you got to play Giannis more minutes. Played 32 minutes last night. And part of his MVP case is, oh, he's doing it in 30 minutes. In the playoffs, he's got to be able to play 40. And he's got to get ramped up to that. I looked it up. He's played 37 minutes, Broussard, twice all year long. For context, James Harden has done it 36 times, LeBron 20 times, Kawhi Leonard, who I'm not even certain enjoys playing basketball, did it 9 times. So, like, for a guy, he's got to start ramping up those minutes. This wasn't a blowout. They could have used him when he was resting. So those are my concerns for the Bucks, Broussard.
Look, Nick, it took 12 minutes, but finally you started making a little bit of sense on the show. So, okay. I will agree with you on that. I think in the playoffs, Giannis will play play bigger minutes. He'll have to in the playoffs because you're absolutely right. And you're right about why they struggle down the stretch is because if teams can keep Giannis from finishing at the basket, then you're right. Like, somebody else is going to have to hit those shots. Yesterday, Brooke Lopez made shots in the paint. But outside of that, Chris Middleton hit 1-3. Can they rely on those other guys to score in the paint? As far as close games, they've only played 4 games within 3 points or less. Every other playoff team has played at least 7, and every other team that comes close to being a contender has played at least 9. So they have no experience playing close games, and that's what Giannis was referring to, and that's why this was a good experience for them. Finally, Houston's a tough matchup for them because Milwaukee, as great as they are defensively, they will give you
the
3.
You shoot threes.
They'd rather give you the 3 than in the paint and at the rim and at the foul line. So Houston being a team that loves to shoot the 3 and shoot it well, that's a problem.
Well, Bucks fans may not be worried about their superstar. Packer fans might be worried about theirs come September. Aaron Rodgers needing a stiff drink after the team drafted Jordan Love this summer. Take a listen.
So I got that text. I went to the pantry. I poured myself, about 4 fingers. And I knew it was going to be one of those nights where the people are going to start calling. And there's going to be, hey, everything fine? You okay?
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Wow. All right, let's move on. Talk some football. Talk the Pac plan. After finishing 13-3 last year, one would assume all was on the up and up in Green Bay, right? Great team, great quarterback, great future. Until draft day, when Aaron Rodgers watched his Packers trade up to select Utah State quarterback Jordan Love. Well, as you'd imagine, it didn't exactly land well with Rodgers. Take a listen to this.
At some point, there's like a ridiculous decision that has to be made, because if you're just you and you can stay healthy, the team has to either choose about we're going to move on from Aaron Rodgers, which is sounds nuts, or we're just not going to play our first round draft pick. How does this end?
I think probably the former. I think that's probably what happens. You know, based on, you know, just the circumstances around everything, you know, you look at, just look at the facts, you know, they traded up, they drafted them. I would say they like them. They want to play them. And I get it. I really do. Like, I don't harbor any ill will about it. Like, was I bummed out? Of course. Mm-hmm. Who wouldn't be? Mm-hmm. You know, like, I wanted to play my entire career in Green Bay. I love the city. I grew up there. Really, I was 21. I'm 36 now. You know, a lot changes during that time. But look, I get it. I see it completely clearly, and I'm not bitter about it. It just kind of is what it is.
Well, I think right now, most importantly, Aaron's our quarterback, and I see him here for a really long time. And however long that is, I don't think anybody knows. Nothing's guaranteed in this league.
All right, so Greg Jennings, there's a lot here. There's a lot of honesty from Aaron Rodgers, Matt LaFleur saying, well, right now he's our quarterback. I think I would have liked to have heard, oh, he's our guy, and just leave it at that. But were you surprised with how open and honest Aaron Rodgers was in this interview?
I'm not surprised. I think the older you get, the longer you are around this league or in a profession, the more awareness you have. And to be honest, the more transparent you can become because you understand what we all can identify as writing on the wall in our respective spaces. And that's what Aaron is identifying, the writing on the wall. I recall when I was in Green Bay and, you know, I was telling my teammates, you know, I'm not going to be here next year. And it wasn't because I did not want to be there. It was because I saw the writing on the wall. The Packers had a history of moving on from guys after year 7. And what Aaron Rodgers is identifying is a team that he's been at the forefront of for so many years, and most recently taking them to the NFC Championship game. And he's being pretty much put in a position where, am I really your guy? If you draft up to draft a quarterback, it's a lot different, as he mentioned in the interview, than when he fell to the 24th pick to back up Brett Favre. This is completely different. However, the team, and he's identified it, they understand that we have to look into our future. We have to prepare for our future. Aaron Rodgers, what I loved about this interview is he was honest. He said, yeah, was I bummed out? Of course. And I think every player can understand and agree and can find some space right where he was in that moment. But what I loved about it was he said, the following day, I reached out to Jordan Love because of my experience. Yeah. I've played this movie. I've co-starred in this movie. And I don't want him to have the experience that I had. I don't want to be what was to me when I came in at the 24th pick. He wants to make sure that his lifelong dream, his aspirations are met with a guy that's embracing him. So I thought it was great by Aaron Rodgers.
I'm glad you keyed on that point, Greg, because the whole spot with Kyle Brandt's worth watching. And that part stuck out to me as well, that he said, you know, that night, draft night, he got FaceTimes from a lot of people, people close to him checking on him, you know, picking his brain on it. But the next day, he reached out to Jordan because he said, listen, it's a lifelong dream that's been realized, and now you're all of a sudden stuck in a controversy almost that you didn't ask for. So he wanted to make sure Jordan Love understood that he supports him and that he holds no ill will towards him. But the other things Aaron pointed out, I thought were intentional, honest, and smart. He said, folks want to compare them drafting Love to drafting me. He said, first of all, I fell in the draft further than expected. They didn't trade up to get me. Second of all, the 2004 Packers were 10-6 and lost their first playoff game. We were 13-3 and a game away from the Super Bowl. He also said, that how closely he was watching the collegiate receivers and that he liked the kid from LSU who went in the 20s. Justin Jefferson, Brandon Ayuk from Arizona State who went in the 20s. And that when they traded up, he, of course, thought they were trading up to make sure one of the receivers was left. And so, listen, Rodgers, I think Rodgers has handled this honestly and well, and it seems like he has been kind of a good guy, if you will, towards Jordan Love. But Wilds, just judging from your face, you and I haven't talked about this, I think you were as taken back by the head coach, Matt LaFleur, pardon me, his comments as Rodgers. Like, why doesn't Matt LaFleur say this? Well, last I checked, Aaron Rodgers is under contract for another four years. So I would imagine he's going to be our quarterback for the next 4 years. Last I checked, first-round picks, they basically have five-year contracts. So, yeah, we drafted this guy, assuming Aaron plays out his deal, and then the final year of our rookie, even if it's a lie. Why is he not saying Aaron Rodgers is playing under the first year of an extension this year? The extension they signed him to kicks in now. Like, I don't know why Matt LaFleur is not saying that, just like I don't know why the Packers went out of their way to trade up for a player who they pray doesn't see the field this year, Wilds.
I totally agree. I also think it's weird that Matt LaFleur has got the only quarterback who's not actively saying that he's super excited to start the season. He's the only one saying, oh, they drafted him, not we drafted him. I wanted to finish my career here instead of I want to finish my career. So, Greg, I don't want to read too much into that those semantics, but that struck me as really weird. Did it hit you in the same way?
100%. 100%. Wiles, what you're talking about is a coach that understands I have to have a relationship with my star player, and my relationship right now is great. It's excellent. And we want to build on that. So don't tie me, even though I'm associated with it, even though I'm a part of the process. Make sure that you take the hit for this. I didn't want to, per se, draft a quarterback, I being the Matt LaFleur. So he's trying to distance himself from those in control of actually making the decisions and having the final say.
All right, Aaron Rodgers with some honest emotion about his future in Green Bay. Joel Embiid and Shake Milton with some honest emotion mid-game Saturday. Their heated exchange next. First things first. Time for us to draw a blank. So Jason Tatum had a bounce back game last night, finished with 34 points, 4 boards, 8 assists in the Celtics win over the Blazers. That after a dismal game one where he went 2-for-18. So, Nick, Tatum's performance yesterday was blank.
Proving my point, America. Listen, this NBA restart is just going to be a cavalcade of instances where I get to look into the camera and say, I've been telling you, why ain't you been listening? This time it's about Tatum. Because you know how we know he's not, forget superstar, he's not yet a star? Because him scoring 34 points, we're like, put it in the show. Got to get in the show, especially after five-point performance to start off the bubble. You know when you're a star? Again, forget superstar. When you're a star, Broussard, when you score 34 points and it's like, oh, I forgot that happened. Like Anthony Davis in game one against the Clippers or like James Harden in either of the... It's like, oh, yeah, that happened. So, listen, I'm happy for Tatum. He bounced back from a five-point game, Broussard, but it proves my point. Not yet a star.
Technically, you're a star when you play in, let's see, the All-Star game?
How about that makes you an All-Star. That don't make you a star. Makes you an All-Star.
All-Stars. There are only stars in that game. He was in it. And this is redemptive, not only for Jason Tatum from that first game he played in the bubble, but for me, because I knew, I guess maybe not because Nick, it didn't stop Nick, but I knew Nick would jump on me for making Jason Tatum second team all NBA.
No.
Because of that game he had a third. I'm still used to, the official vote, you know, not just.
Oh my God. The pretend phone that Nick gets.
Go Wild.
Hey, I went with LeBron-esque Broussard because in the first game, LeBron's first half, he went 2-for-9, had 6 points, had someone named @GetNickWright tweeting about, is LeBron going to score at least 10 points? So everybody has a little rough patches and has a big bounce back game. It's exactly what happened to Tatum.
Hey, by the way, real quick before we move on, congrats, star Domantas Sabonis. Because by Broussard's metric, he's a star. Made an all-star team. All look it up, America. Star. Look it up.
I didn't take his vote the away. Game. I didn't name the game.
Let us stick with this one. Team.
The all pretty good game.
All right, so Portland takes the L in this game. They now slip to 2.5 games out of the 8th seed. They'll have a tough road to the postseason. Nick, back to you. The Blazers' playoff chances now are blank.
1-6. Listen, they got a critical win their first game in the bubble when it looked like they had blown the game, and then they ended up forcing overtime, start overtime on a 13-0 run. But this is why everyone's like, oh, Lakers got to be worried about McCollum and Lillard in the backcourt. If they're not going to make the playoffs, America. I felt this way before the bubble started. We weren't on the air the day the bubble started, so I'm putting it in stone. They're not going to make the playoffs. It's not just that they have to be the team that ends up at the 9 seed, which is by no means a lock, but they then have to beat the Grizzlies in back-to-back must-win games. It's not going to happen. The Blazers, to misquote Denny Green, are who we thought they were. They're fine. Even, oh my God, Yusuf Nurkic. Like, come on. They're not going to make the playoffs. Sorry, Dame, and I love you, CJ, but 1-6 chance, about 16%. We're sorry.
I totally disagree. I think their chances are strong. Memphis is in free fall. They're 0-2. Now, I know they played their games tough, but they still have lost. And they're young. Their youth will show. San Antonio is the team you got to watch out for. They're obviously a half game ahead of Memphis for that 9th spot. Portland for the 9th spot. But Portland has the tiebreaker, and I think Portland is the better team. And they both have tough schedule. Everybody seems at this point to have a fairly tough schedule. But I think Portland's chances are great. I'll bet on Dame and CJ and Jokic and Carmelo
and
over
Mello.
The guys from the Spurs and the guys from Memphis. They just got to be within four
Zion
games, and they
beat
them in the tiebreaker.
Zion and the Pelicans playing the Grizzlies today. If we look at the Grizzlies schedule, Pelicans, Jazz, Thunder, Raptors, Celtics, Bucks. This also looks like a bowling lineup. Blazers have Rockets. Maybe they have a little bit of a letdown game. Nuggets, Clippers, 76ers, Mavericks, Nets, which is an automatic win. Look, Nick, you better hope the Blazers don't make it, because once playoff Melo gets activated, you're in trouble. In that first game in the bubble, Melo did hit two critical corner threes to help force overtime. There we go.
Blazers with playoff six Melo. Seeding games to go. On to the Sixers now. They had a little shakeup on Saturday with Joel Embiid and Shake Milton getting into a verbal spat during a timeout. Embiid said it was nothing. Sixers head coach Brett Brown said, quote, "I actually think stuff like that is far more healthy than anything. As a mom of two girls 16 months apart, I disagree." Nick, Embiid and Shake's heated exchange on Saturday was blank.
This is on Embiid, man. Listen, Shake Milton, he gets promoted into the starting lineup. Everyone makes a big deal of it. He's 23 years old. He went to SMU. This is the biggest spot of his career, and he struggles here. So listen, nobody calls out the pick, and he gets crushed. Embiid's yelling at him right there. He's looking back at Embiid because he's getting yelled at. When he gets ripped, then a three hit comes.
You got the ball.
The very next possession, Shake does too much here and travels, and then watch his eyes. He knows he's about to be pulled from the game. He's glancing over at the bench like, God dog it. And then Embiid screams at him. Embiid was unbelievable in this game. He was great on as far as his play. But Joel Embiid, come on, man. You've got to pick up your young player. And so Embiid, to me, instigated this, and he probably was the one who was supposed to call out the screen that Shake got crushed on, that got the whole thing going. So as great as Embiid was as far as his play, I put that whole thing at his feet because he's got to be the leader. He's got to know better there, Broussard.
I think it was just sad. This is just another sign of their immaturity, which is one of the things that's going to make them underachieve this season. And also, they have admittedly said that they are soft. Ben Simmons has called them a soft team. That is something that has followed them this year after they've lost Jimmy Butler, who was their toughest player last year. And they go out and play Indiana, give up 46 points in the fourth quarter, play a soft game, and yet the only time they show some fight is against each other in the huddle. It's ridiculous. That's my point. It's sad. Show some fight on the floor against the opponent, not with each other.
Can we run that clip again, Hubbard, if we can? Nick, are you blaming this turnover on Embiid because Embiid is yelling at Shake Milton? Shake Milton has the ball.
Yes.
And turns around to argue back. And that's Embiid's. We literally have the ball.
Because his best player's yelling at him.
And TJ McConnell's
yelling at him. His best player's yelling at him, so he turns
the ball in your hands.
Stop yelling at your teammates.
Meanwhile, TJ McConnell's like, by the way, I was Sixers point guard. You need a point guard.
By the way, since we're breaking the format a bit, Jenna, shout out to star Nikola Vucevic, who made an all-star team 2 years ago. We got star.
I'm talking about the tomato.
Vucevic.
I got a show last Thursday I want to talk about. Talking some Lakers guys on the other side. How should LeBron feel after dropping a game to the defending champs? This is first. All right, time now for some stories to start your morning, beginning with the birthday boy. Happy birthday to one Thomas Edward Brady, who turns 43 today. So what do you get for the guy who has everything? That's not rhetorical. I'm literally asking. Nick, what do you get for Tom Brady for his birthday?
Well, Wilds, I sent him a new cell phone because, you know, I figured he's destroyed a lot over the years. He could use one. I saw recently they said he's still on the iPhone 6. No one knew why he was still on it. It's because it's the most easily destructible of the iPhones. As they've gotten newer, they become harder to break. And so that's important.
Sledgehammer right to it. Boom.
Yep.
I have moved on, Nick, but I did get you a present. We were off last week, and finally the present arrived. I thought you were going to set it up.
You threw
it
back to me, and I have to set you up for you.
Hold on.
Let me see what it is. You did get me something. Oh, look at this.
I want to get you a size medium. Look at it. Since you're a Patriots fan,
I'm not a sports bigamist. I'm not a Patriots fan, but I do like Cam Newton. I think my wife will wear this.
He's on the Patriots.
This is great.
No, you should wear it.
He happens
I'm going to send one to the whole
season.
Family. The whole family and the dog.
Very nice.
You know what, Wilds?
Classy move,
very
Wilds.
Kind of
classy move.
You're welcome.
It's very nice of you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bruce, all right, I'll send you some stuff too. I'll send you a Tatum jersey. Tatum is an all-star for putting him in the all-star team.
Tatum.
Thank you for the respect on his name.
Moving on to some rocket power now, guys. Houston taking down the Bucks last night. 120-116 was the final. Russ and Harden combining for 55 points. While Giannis couldn't quite get it done despite his 36-18-8 night. Broussard, what was your biggest takeaway from this game?
Well, the fact that Houston played really good defense down the stretch. They had done it against Dallas, which is one of the top offensive teams in the league, in their first game in the bubble. So I like that. That shows that when they have to, they may be able to get some stops in the playoffs.
Well, I'm going to add something else on the Bucks side of things. Further solidification that Giannis is on his way to being the best player in the world, Wilds. He's now held to the rarely seen LeBron standard, which is he can have a game where he had 36-18-8, but he made a couple mistakes late, and everyone is only going to focus on that. Like, they're going to throw out how great he was for 46 minutes. Man, because he struggled in the last couple, it's going to be an indictment, which only happens to the best of the best, Wilds.
That's true. I mean, he threw it to Korver when he wasn't supposed to, and then didn't throw him to him when he should. Look, my take on the Rockets, are they like a fireman's pole in your house? I get it. It's more efficient. It's faster. It's probably fun. Problem is, it leaves a big gaping hole in the floor that's a dangerous disaster. And that's the rebounding. They got a rebound out-rebounded by 29 rebounds and still won. And everyone's like, this is great. That's not a way to win. It's going to eventually fall apart. It's going to doom them eventually. But it'll be fun while it lasts.
Is that a thing? People have fireman poles? Yeah.
Clutch free throws by Russ. Clutch free throws by him at the end. Sorry, go ahead, Jenna.
All right, on to the Raptors' roll now. Toronto taking down the Lakers Saturday night. Kyle Lowry looking impressive, finishing with 33 points, 14 boards, 6 assists. While LeBron and AD, they struggled. They finished with a combined 34 points. Both teams back in action tonight. The Raptors will face the Heat. The Lakers will take on the Utah Jazz. But, Nick, did Toronto's win over the Lakers on Saturday say more about the Raptors or the Lakers?
To me, this is more about the Raptors. Quickly on the Lakers, I understand that some people be concerned. They played the toughest team, the best team, and the toughest team that they've played thus far in the bubble, and they lost to them. And so I get that, and they lost in, I mean, they lost in bad fashion at the end. But the Lakers are in a weird spot because they've dominated the Western Conference so much throughout the year. The one seed was clinched with that victory over the Clippers team that they beat despite LeBron not playing well. And so the rest of the bubble is kind of experimenting. JR got more minutes than he typically would or was ready for. So I'm not worried about the Lakers. To me, Broussard, this is about the defending champion Toronto Raptors, who are going to do their best to dispel one of the most scurrilous myths around the NBA this year.
Scurrilous.
Which is that they were a hapless team before Kawhi, and they'll be a hapless team after Kawhi. The Raptors, now, can we show it? They played 65 games this year. Can we show last 3 years through 65 games? 48 wins before Kawhi. 47 wins after Kawhi. 46 wins with Kawhi. Oh, but Nick, they couldn't get over the hump. No, what they couldn't do before Kawhi got there was beat LeBron. And they wouldn't have been able to beat LeBron last year either. LeBron was just in a different conference and got hurt. This is a testament, Broussard, to Masai Ujiri, the man who's on every graphic right there, Kyle Lowry, the growth of Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, Nick Nurse. This is an excellent team that plays hard, plays tough, and shows up every single night and wants to remind the world, we are the defending champs. Even though we lost Danny Green, we're still going to be right there. And so I credit to the Raptors for
Danny
what they've
Green
been able to do.
Under the bus. That's not
First
nice.
Of all, Nick, you save the $10 words. No sports fans know what scurrilous means. I don't even know what scurrilous means. So look. The Raptors, you're right. It says a lot about them. They are as well coached, as hard nosed, and as tough minded as any team in the league. And I give them a decent shot to make some noise in the playoffs. But I had to look at it, and I think this says more about the Lakers. Now, I'm not overreacting. I'm not going to overreact to one loss. But I think some of it, you can argue, was it a letdown after beating the Clippers? That was the matchup they were really pointing towards. And as you said, it locked up the one seed. I'm not worried about LeBron, who's only averaging 18 points in the first two games. Anthony Davis only had, 14, I believe, against the Raptors, didn't play well. Yep. I'm not worried about those two. But what it really says, though, why I say it says more about the Lakers is because their perimeter defense, again, I said this in the A block. It is a problem without Avery Bradley. And for now, Rajon Rondo, they can't guard on the perimeter. LeBron, again, can lock down some small forwards when he has to. But J.R. Smith, Deion Waiters, Alex Caruso is a decent defender. They had Kyle Kuzma trying to guard Kyle Lowry. That's why Lowry went for 33. The Lakers have given up on average 15 threes in these two games in the bubble. There is not a team in the NBA that gave up an average of even 14 threes a game, let alone 15. Their struggles to defend on the perimeter could come back to haunt them.
Broussard, it's back to the Wild. Hey, how are you, everybody? Happy Monday. Welcome back. Broussard, I got some numbers I want to show you. We talk more about Marnie and tomatoes that look like Larry Bird than we do the chances of having a Clippers-Raptors finals. Did you know? We do talk about Marnie. There's only three times in the last 20 years do the two number one seeds meet in the finals. I think we just assume that's going to go chalk, but it's 2016, 2008, and 2000. But we also, and I know you're halfway there already with the Clippers going in, but why don't we think the Raptors could also join them?
The second number is this. More 2 seeds in the last 10 years have made the finals than 1 seeds. So the idea that we could have this Kawhi back against Toronto is just a storyline no one's talking about. It would change Kawhi's legacy. It would change Kyle Lowry's legacy. You're halfway there. Could you see the Raptors meeting the Clippers?
Here's one reason, and I really like the Raptors a lot, but here's one reason I don't think they'll reach the finals. I give them a shot, but I don't think they will. They are 1-7 against the Lakers, the Clippers, the Rockets, the Bucks, and the Celtics. 1-7, and they beat Boston once out of 3 times. The only really top contender they've beaten is the Lakers, and they're 2-0 against them, and that speaks to the Lakers' problems defending the perimeter. But against the other top teams in the league, they haven't been up to snuff, and that's why I don't think they'll be able to get to the finals.
Well, if there's going to be a 1 seed that doesn't – sorry, Jenna. If there's going to be a 1 seed that doesn't make the finals, it'll come out of the East because the Lakers are going to make it out of the West. But at some point, Jenna – folks are going to give the Raptors their due. Last year, they were 17-5 without Kawhi. The previous couple years, they were excellent teams until LeBron James snatched their souls. And this year, they're again one of the 4 best teams in basketball, through pre-restart, post-restart, and folks just want to make it the Paul Bunyan tales about Kawhi, as opposed to giving credit to Nick Nurse, Masai Ujiri, and that entire team that they have there, Jenna.
Do we, Chris Broussard, feel differently, at least in the early going, what you've seen so far, feel differently about the Raptors than you did coming into the restart? Or do you still feel like they'll finish where they do?
No, I like the Raptors going in. Look, again, seeing them in person, it is evident how hard that team plays. In their backcourt, Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet, they are one of the most underrated backcourts in the league. I like the Raptors a lot. I'm just saying, when they have played the elite teams other than the Lakers, they have struggled badly. Again, 1-7 against Houston, the Clippers, the Celtics, and the Bucks. That says something.
Nice for Broussard to have Houston amongst the elite teams. How about that?
Here we go.
Look at Houston.
I got about 4 things I want to... I want to blame Kawhi for, Nick. We got to go. We're all going to say things at the same time. Have a great rest of the day, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow. Stay safe.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.